Brian Noonan is playing on the radio, baby.
News, traffic, sports, weather. News, traffic, sports, weather. News, traffic, sports, weather. News, traffic, sports, weather. The bell tolls. It's
Noonan o'clock.
I hear voices in my head. They talk to me.
You're stealing my pot pie.
Bernard, did you rip up the store today?
Yeah, he's got the front tables.
No, Mama, I was a good employee today.
Why, son, I said, son, let me get myself a daiquiri over here. Run down, pick me up a moon pie and an RC Cola. I'm going to meet you down by Kirk with Luda Warsh.
You could say I'm a little bit crazy.
That is the most sinister call laugh that we've ever had on this program, Cody. You need to isolate that laugh.
Noonan o'clock.
You know, I have found in my travels that all the best things in life happen after 2 a.m. Because after 2 a.m. is when things get, audience, say it with me, legendary.
Well, it's the big show. Yes, it's a big, bad show tonight.
Good morning. Welcome. Glad you're with me. It's Brian Noonan in for Nick D this week. Nick is on vacation, resting up, getting involved in the big film festival this weekend. And I am very excited to be in for him all week. It's good to be back in the overnights. Glad you are with me. Big show planned. It's always more fun when you get involved. 312-981-7200. That's the number you call in. Of course, we'll be talking to Dan Chigrou, executive producer of the Nick D program. If you're nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. You can also keep in touch with us via social media on Facebook and Twitter. It's Brian Noonan Show. So go there. And good to see you, Esmeralda and Vic. It's been a long time, so this is going to be very exciting. Here all week.
Welcome. We'll have fun.
I hope so. That's the plan, anyway. On paper, Vic, that's always the plan. The execution is where things tend to get a little rough, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And I know Vic will be keeping an eye on the events down in Florida, the hurricane. So far, Hurricane Matthew, the eye shifted a little bit, right? So it hasn't, the eye hasn't come on land.
No, but it has not. It's staying off, and the latest forecast keeps it a little bit east of the coastline, but it's still going to be some wind damage, power outages, and there's the storm surge that, in fact, Brian, there was a buoy that clocked measured a 17-foot storm surge. It's obviously off the coast near the eye of the storm. Again, that may not hit the coast depending on where the hurricane, the eye goes. So we'll see.
It's amazing. And I always love the people who will not evacuate. We're not going anywhere. It's just a hurricane. Really? Okay. Then I find it very, very difficult to send people in to get you when you're sitting on your roof after they've said, you know what, you really have to leave. The governor comes on, the president comes on. You know what, folks, this storm is serious. We're not messing around. This could be very dangerous. You need to get out. Nah, we're just going to go to Costco, get some water. Everything will be fine. I got a ton of canned goods. I can ride this thing out. Sure, unless the storm picks up your house and throws it, then I don't know how you're going to ride it out. But those people are always there. They're brave. They're sea folk. They're the coastal equivalent of the high desert meth people. That's the kind of folks that are going to stay. Pardon me, a little trail mix coming back up on me. But that always amazes me.
What desert people?
The high desert meth people. You ever see? When I lived in California, we would drive through the high desert to get to Vegas. And there's a certain type of person that lives in the desert, out in the middle of nowhere. All of a sudden, you'll be driving through the desert, and you'll see a little stucco adobe house. And then you'll see like four pickup trucks out in front of it. And you know, if you've ever seen the movie Salt and Sea with Val Kilmer, you know these people are cooking up meth, either in the house, under the house, in the trailer behind the house. They're eating rattlesnakes and whatever other varmints come crawling through the dirt in their yard because they're 100 miles from the closest grocery store. There's not a Ralph's down at the corner for them to run out and get a gallon of milk and a loaf of bread. No, They're living in the desert on their own wits and their leathery skin. And they're just, it's a certain mentality. It's like living off the grid, but still trying to be near the grid. You know what I mean? You want to seem like you're still part of society. But really, if you're living in the middle of the desert with nothing around you, what society are you part of? Some weird druid culture that's going to make rock formations? Maybe you go to Burning Man. Maybe you are a Burning Man. I don't know what you'd do out there. Set yourself. I think just living in the desert, you'd be a Burning Man. You'd set yourself on fire anyway.
When you drove past these folks, what kind of structures were they living in?
Just imagine a cinder block with a front door.
Hmm.
That would be it. Just a larger cinder block. Maybe there's a roof on it, some sort of roof. And then just a door and a lot of vehicles. A lot of vehicles and a lot of no trespassing signs. The last thing I am ever going to do is wander onto your property willy-nilly. Go, hey, what's going on in here? Nothing. And then the next sound I hear is a blast. And all I see is darkness that envelops me. Much like the darkness that envelops me all the time. But so that's how I equate the real coastal people. Coastal people get a better vibe because there's that Jimmy Buffett mentality of, hey, man, I live on the water. I'm really cool and I'm salty. And look at me. All I wear is shorts. And that's, in my mind, that's a much better lifestyle. But Mother Nature is, she doesn't play, really. She's a vengeful, horrible woman, Mother Nature. And she will smack you down if you get uppity. And that's what these people get. They're, oh, I don't care what she brings. We're not all Lieutenant Dan strapped to a boat, you know? We can't just rage against God and nature and hope that Forrest will come and give us some cake or chocolate or whatever Forrest Gump brings. Shrimp. Just a whole menu of stuff from a guy in an ill-fitting white suit. I don't need to hear any of that. All right? How come whenever I'm here for Nick, you draw me into these insane rants right at the beginning of the show?
I mean, it amuses me.
I just start going off on some wild tangent. All I wanted to do was ask Vic if we were going to watch the progress of the hurricane, because I know he's got his eye on the sky, and he's covering the news. And then suddenly I'm in the high desert, and I'm smoking meth with a lizard eater, and I'm back strapped to a boat mast. I don't understand how any of that happens.
I was following the storm. Now I'm Googling meth labs in Arizona.
Go with the high desert. Go in Palmdale, California. Palmdale and Victorville. Those would be the high deserts that I drove through. Then you cross, of course, you cross into Nevada. Or Nevada. I say Nevada because I like that hard A sound. The Nevada makes it sound too soft. And nothing about Nevada is soft. From the hookers to the weather, everything is hard out there. Very tough. What's the matter, Esmeralda? Never had Nevada. That was what I tried to pitch the tourism board for Nevada. They didn't take it. Come to Nevada, everything's hard, from the weather to the hookers. They went, nope, pass. We're going to go with what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I went, okay, that seems a little basic to me, a little forward, but, you know, I believe in truth in advertising. I'm not one of these madmen who create an alternate universe. I give the people what they want, the truth. That's what I'm running on, the truth. I say what nobody wants said. That's how I set myself apart from the other candidates. Because I say what. You're probably wondering, do you have anything planned for the show, Brian? Or is this
nope,
just
gonna this.
Be a 3-hour non sequitur rant about everything under the sun? No, we do have a plan. In just a couple minutes, this is exciting. We're going to talk to two of the organizers of the Chicago International Film Festival, which is in its 52nd year. Can you believe it? 52nd year. So we'll talk to them. We're going to do all Nick D's regular features for a Friday morning. So don't panic. If you like Fly Jam Friday, we're going to do it. You like You Big Dummy? Sure, we're going to do that. Out of Context, we doing that straight out of context, Dan? Yeah, we're doing that too.
Yep.
So we got everything a normal, regular Nick D show has for a Friday morning, except for Nick, because he's on vacation. But we'll do the best we can. We'll make do with what we got. You know, Esmeralda and Vic and Dan are here. So you got three of the four. And then, you know. I talked about meth labs in the high desert. So that's how we started things off. All right, let's do this. And then when we come back, we will meet two of the men who are running the Chicago International Film Festival, which is starting next week on October 13th. So you do not want to miss it. Make sure you are there if you are a fan of film, which I'm sure you are. Let's do this. Then there's more. It's Brian Frenick on 720 WGN. It's Brian Noonan in for Nick on 720 WGN. If you are a fan of film in Chicago, well, worldwide film, but if you're in Chicago, you need to get to the Chicago International Film Festival, which runs October 13th to the 27th. I know a little bit because I've read some things, but two men who know so much about the festival join me now. First, we say hi to Sam Flancher. He is the competition's coordinator and the short films programmer. And Alex Vasquez is with us also. He is the After Dark programmer, which is horror movies, and the showrunner for the festival. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me this morning. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
So this is, I can't believe it, the 52nd year for the Chicago International Film Festival. Alex, since you're the competitions coordinator, or Sam, since you're the competitions coordinator, how many movies do you guys have to watch to get to the point now to fill this the roster that people will see over the 14 days at the festival?
Well, it's a pretty big number. I think when the programming department tallied them all up, it was around 5,000 considered, with short films and documentaries and feature films all rolled into one. It was around 5,000 this year.
So are you guys already watching films for next year's festival?
Not quite. We're still busy with this year's festival, but around January the programming process starts. So it is most of the year we are busy, hunkered down, watching movies.
So since you both program different segments of the festival, Alex, when you're watching these horror movies for the After Dark section of the festival, what are you looking for? What is it about a film that you say, you know what, we have to include this?
Well, it's a number of things, actually, and I think it, maybe Sam can also attest to this, but I think it crosses all genres, no matter what we're watching and no matter for what program. It has something about it that either sparks conversation in the office or it sparks some sort of passionate reaction. It doesn't even mean that everybody loves every single movie that we're watching, but that it inspires something in us, that it makes us think, oh, we need to show this to people, or there's something special about this, or there's something unique about this that, you know, that there's some reason maybe we don't, this maybe isn't something that people will get to see every day either. It'll maybe, you know, get them thinking outside the box or watching something, maybe even a little something outside their comfort zone, that, you know, they have a really special time at the movies and that they, you know, that they have a memorable time with us at the festival.
How, when you're watching these films, is it important if a film has, you know, been at other festivals, does that put a little something in your head to go, oh, well, this one might be something? Or do you kind of try to push that aside and just look at each film individually on its own merits?
You go ahead, Alex. Oh, I was going to say, I try to look at everything based on its own merit. But if it has some sort of festival play, it sometimes piques interest in the office as well. I can echo that remark. I think sometimes if you're wavering about something or unsure, if you look back and see that the film has played around, it kind of gives you the confidence that somebody else saw the same kinds of things in the festival. Other programmers were responding to something that you are responding to. So it helps.
I think it was you, Alex, that mentioned comfort zone, getting people out of their comfort zone. Now, of course, the Chicago International Film Festival is going to draw film aficionados, but you want to pull in the regular movie-going public, too. Is it difficult to try to get people out of that comfort zone to say, hey, you know, you're used to going to these big studio movies, but there's some wonderful shorts, there's some documentaries, there's things here that you need to see. How do you draw those people in?
Well, with my program, at least, it's pretty easy because my program is what we call After Dark. So that's already implying, you know, the people who are interested in it probably already want something that's going to sort of rock their socks a little bit, you know, to see something a little bit scandalous or to see something kind of crazy on screen.
Right.
So that's what I really try to go for, to see something that even maybe kind of piques my interest or gets me out of my jaded, oh, I've seen it all kind of zone.
Now, Sam, with you, with short films, you know, there's people who love short films, but there's some people, and myself included, and I'll cop to this, I give it at the Academy Awards. I go, short film, whatever. That doesn't mean they're not good. It just means I haven't been exposed to them. So how do you convince a guy like me who is open to watch them that, yeah, this is really cool. You need to come on in.
Well, I think it starts with sort of recognizing that the short film world has fewer rules than the feature film world. I mean, the running times are anywhere from, I mean, in the program this year, we have shorts as short as 5 minutes and as long as 30 minutes. So there are kind of fewer boundaries. So I think the festival we do a really good job of packaging the shorts sort of alongside the shorts programs alongside features, and sort of we give them the same kind of weight. So we're asking audiences, hey, you can come see these excellent After Dark movies, but we also have an After Dark program of shorts. So we kind of guide viewers into coming to see the short films.
And when the folks go to ChicagoFilmFestival.com to pick up their tickets, are you buying tickets to individual features, or are you coming in for the day and you can go see as many films as you want, or as you can jam in?
Yeah, you are buying tickets to individual films or blocks of shorts programming. So basically, each shorts program is about 90 minutes long, okay. So you can buy one ticket that will get you into a 90-minute program, or you're buying tickets to individual features. You can also buy passes that allow you to see 10 movies or 20 movies. You can buy a pass and then pick which films you want to go and see.
Well, there's a lot of buzz over opening night because you've got a big film coming in for the opening night on October 13th that hasn't been – it's making its world premiere at the Chicago – or premiered in Venice, right? But it's – you guys have it second, or the big opener, La La Land?
Yeah, La La Land's our big, it's a Chicago premiere, and Damien Chazelle, the director, had a lot of success with his last movie, Whiplash, so we're very excited to be showing it.
So if people haven't heard it, what is La La Land?
You want to take this one, Sam? Yeah, I can take this one. It's a musical. We're doing a spotlight on musicals this year,
sort of
throwback to the old Hollywood days when the song and dance sort of ruled the day. La La Land is starring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. Emma Stone plays sort of a down on her luck actress in modern day Los Angeles, and Ryan Gosling is a jazz musician who's struggling as well. So it's just sort of a romance set in that backdrop, and it's told with a lot of pizzazz and flair. It's pretty fun.
Pizzazz and flair are two things that I enjoy the most.
Well, you can come on down.
It sounds great. So we got to talk more because there's so many things. You've got wonderful tributes, special guests, actors, and I want to get some highlights from you guys of both your programs, the short films and the After Dark, and so much more. Sam Flancher is here. He's a competitions coordinator and short films programmer, and Alex Vasquez is the After Dark programmer and the showrunner for the Chicago International Film Festival, which runs October 13th through the 27th at AMC River East 21, which at 322 East Illinois. Go to ChicagoFilmFestival.com to get all the information, the full lineup and everything. We'll talk more with the guys on the other side. This is 720 WGN. Brian Noonan in for Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, and we are talking film, in particular the Chicago International Film Festival, which runs October 13th through the 27th. You want all the information? Of course you do. Go to ChicagoFilmFestival.com. Sam Flancher is with me. He is the competitions coordinator and the short films programmer, and Alex Vasquez is here as well. He's the After Dark programmer and the showrunner for the festival. Guys, if we could, I want to go back to what we were talking about a little right before we went to the news. We're talking about opening night and how you're having the Chicago premiere of La La Land, this new musical starring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. There's been a lot of talk about this movie already. People are already saying this could be a contender for Academy Award. How does a film like this get into the Chicago International Film Festival? Does the studio approach you? Do you guys reach out because you've heard about this from other festivals? How do these bigger films get into the festival?
Well, I think we do a lot of negotiations with studios, and we meet with them sort of throughout the year and sort of find out what's on their radar, and they can find out what we're sort of looking for. So this year, Spotlight being musicals, we kind of put a bug in the bigger studios' ears about, hey, this is what we're doing. if there's anything higher profile that you can send our way, that would be great. So it's sort of a back and forth all year long. It's a year-long process.
So, and forgive me if I put this in a coarse way, but do the studios then feel like they're doing the festival a favor, or is the festival really helping the studios because you're getting the word out about this film that they hope will go on to bigger and better things?
I think we help each other out in that kind of way, just because, I mean, you're already hearing buzz about La La Land, and that's because of its festival play, right?
Right. So yeah.
A film, prior to its theatrical release, can sort of generate this groundswell of support and buzz. So when it does get released theatrically, people are sort of chomping at the bit to see it.
And since La La Land is a big studio film, Closing Night is also another big studio film, Arrival, which has Amy Adams, who I love, and Jeremy Renner, who does a great job. What's Arrival about?
Arrival is a science fiction film, kind of in the vein of something like Contact, from back in 1995. About like the, you know, less about maybe the action packed aspect of making contact with extraterrestrials, and more about the actual communication between us and them, or something like Close Encounters, maybe a little bit more of the awe-inspiring sort of family drama element of it. And it's from Denis Villeneuve, the director of Sicario last year with Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
He also did Prisoners with Hugh Jackman years back, so they were both pretty great successes for the studio. So this one's also getting a lot of great studio buzz, or buzz from other festivals. It's another Chicago premiere. We're really excited about it.
And so you're opening and closing strong, and then there's 13 Days in the Middle, where you're strong with all the other great films that are coming up. You're also doing a lot of tributes in the film festival this year, as you do every year. One of them is to Steve McQueen, who was a director of 12 Years a Slave, and what that is commemorating something pretty big and monumental with the festival, right?
It is. It's the 20th anniversary of our Black Perspectives program, and so that's a program that has sort of highlighted African-American filmmaking talent for the past 20 years. And so Steve McQueen actually won the Gold Hugo, which is our top prize, for his first film, Hunger, at the festival back in, I think it was 2008. So we're really excited to have him join us and sort of celebrate 20 years of Black Perspectives.
That's very cool. And how much has that segment of film grown over the since the inception of the Black Perspective program?
Oh, I mean, it's been just astonishing growth. There's just the way film has opened up in the last the last decade, really, with technology sort of allowing anyone to make a movie. With you're seeing filmmakers from more diverse backgrounds constantly bubbling up to the top, and there's just a ton of talent there.
And now you mentioned Steve McQueen, and you've mentioned a couple times the musicals. How big is the musical footprint on the festival this year?
We have musicals sort of from all over the world. I think we have 10 this year.
Oh, wow.
If I'm not mistaken, we have them. We have one.
Well, if you include La La Land,
sorry, Alex, go ahead.
If you include La La Land, our opening night film, we have 11. Musicals from all over the world, including both at home and abroad. Our other U.S. musical is the upcoming movie Trolls, starring Justin Timberlake and Anna Kendrick is the voice of those little trolls
crazy hair, the troll dolls.
Wigged trolls.
And that's a movie coming out now.
Yeah.
Well, listen.
Yeah. An animated 3D. Yeah.
Who said Hollywood is running out of ideas?
Exactly.
Not me.
No, we would never say that. but we've also got musicals from Brazil. We have musicals from Israel, Poland, Belgium. We have, of course, and you can't do a musicals program without a Bollywood musical.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So we have one more really excited about, the Chicago premiere film called Mirzia,
which is going to be quite the star-studded affair. And then one of the ones that I think is really interesting is an Israeli musical called Junction 48, which is more of a hip hop musical.
Oh wow!
So you know we're really exploring like and you know what the definition of a musical means today, because it used to when people think musicals they maybe think of something like La La Land, that really classical Hollywood kind of singing in the rain style.
Yeah.
A musical, but it can, you know, especially the way it's been more been played with all around the world, it can mean a whole lot of different things to different people. So,
well, sure, it can mean trolls.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why not? Did other countries seem to, or maybe I'm reading something. There seem to be more musicals from other countries than there are from the U.S. Is that accurate, or am I off? And what do you think that means? Do we not embrace musicals as much? Or maybe I just don't embrace musicals as much.
We looked at a couple of musicals from the United States, but because of our international focus, I think we really wanted to highlight some of the great work that's being done sort of all over the world. I mean, even in the short film world, I looked at probably about 50 short films that were musicals that were not music videos, but they were musicals.
Wow.
So I think there's some work being done in the United States, too.
Now, you mentioned how the difference in how films are made when we were talking about the Black Perspectives program. One of the guests you've got coming on is Howard Tolman. He's the CEO of Tech Incubator 1871. So with all the new technology, how has that changed the way films are being made?
Well, I think Sam sort of mentioned it earlier, too, when he was talking about Black Perspectives. The way that films are being made, I think, in many ways sort of democratizes movie making, maybe a little bit more than it used to. That sense that, you know, since the technology is becoming more available and maybe a little bit less expensive, it sort of really bolsters up that anybody can pick up a camera, put together some resources, and, you know, make something really special. And I think year after year, you're gonna see more and more of that, and also in places around the world where maybe it were not as not as easy to make a movie for whatever number of reasons, due to a lack of resources or a lack of an industry, that's really changing. And I think festivals like ours as well do our best with our international focus to try to bring the very best from around the world, and maybe from countries where you'd never expect a film to be, or expect to see a film from, to see something really great from them. I think the benefits work both here in the U.S. and all around the world, hopefully.
And when you talk about democratizing, the Chicago International Film Festival features dozens of different filmmakers. Some, you know, we know by name, they're established, but a lot of newcomers that are getting their shot now to get their stuff out there so people can appreciate their art.
Well, yeah, it's one of the sort of cornerstones of the film festival since its inception in 1964 is our new directors competition. We really have always strove to highlight emerging talent, and every year our competition sort of selects usually between 10 and 15 films from directors, whether it be their first or second feature, so brand new filmmakers, and there's a competition between all those films, and there's just some really striking movies from, again, all over the world.
Talking with Sam Flancher and Alex Vasquez, they are in running the, well, let's say running, the Chicago International Film Festival. Sam is the competition's coordinator. I'll give you guys new titles. Who cares? Put it on your business card. And Alex is the After Dark programmer and the showrunner. I want to talk about the, when we come back, the competition jury president, which is a very big name that everybody will recognize, someone she's related to. And we'll talk about some of the other things. And then I want to get, since you guys are programmers of different segments, I want to get a highlight from the short films and a highlight, if you can. That's why I'm giving you a couple minutes, because I know it's probably like picking your favorite child. But get some of the highlights from each of your programs. We'll do all of that on the other side. Again, if you want to get to the Chicago International Film Festival, and why wouldn't you go to chicagofilmfestival.com. www.lalaland.com to get all the ticket information and the full schedule. It runs October 13th through the 27th at AMC River East 21322 East Illinois Street. So get there. We'll talk more with the guys and more about the Chicago International Film Festival on the other side. It's 720 WGN. Brian Nooner for Nick D on 720 WGN. Talking about the Chicago International Film Festival, which opens October 13th with the Chicago premiere of La La Land. It runs through October 27th. ChicagoFilmFestival.com for all the schedule, all the information, and all the ways to get in. Sam Flancher is with us. He's the competitions coordinator and the short films programmer. And Alex Vasquez is the After Dark programmer and the showrunner. Guys, I want to ask you about the main competition jury president. She has a last name that is very familiar.
Right. She does. She's the acclaimed actress Geraldine Chaplin, and Chaplin sort of rings a few bells in the film world.
Yes, he does. So she is coming in not only on her own merits, but she's coming to talk about her dad and some the films that he did.
She is. It's kind of it's a really special event we have planned for this year. She's going to be honored for her great work as an actress and like Dr. Zhivago and Nashville and The Forbidden Room and Welcome to L.A. She's had a great career on the screen, but she'll actually be at SNA Studios, which is where Charlie Chaplin shot his very first film. So it's going to be pretty exciting, and there'll be a lot of Chaplin talk to go around.
So she's being honored. Another honored guest is another name that film lovers will know. Peter Bogdanovich is going to be here.
That's right, yeah. He's here with a documentary that was recently made about sort of a lost film of his or an unsung film of his. The documentary is called One Day Yesterday, and we're actually really fortunate to have the director's cut of the film that the documentary is about. It's called They All Last.
Okay.
And Peter Bogdanovich will be on hand to talk along with both films, which is pretty amazing.
That sounds very cool. He's also getting the Gold Hugo Lifetime Achievement Award, correct?
Oh, he absolutely is. And he is just a trip to talk to. He's a film historian as well as a filmmaker. So he's got such a deep knowledge of the art form, and we're just so happy to have him.
All of these sound like wonderful panels to get to sit in on. How, if you were to advise people, can they still get into these panels, or are those already packed out?
Tickets are available for most of these still,
but they should get on it right now. Correct?
Yes, they'll go fast though. Yeah, I would act quickly.
So go to ChicagoFilmFestival.com. If you think, ooh, that sounds interesting, go get your tickets now because you don't want to be crying later that you couldn't get in. You've got some big-name actors coming, too, that people will know. One that stuck out, and this is, Alex, this is one of the films, your program, the After Dark program, that I've seen, and it was creepy when it came out, and you guys are bringing it back. Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, Michael Rooker is going to be here.
Oh yes, I'm very, very, very excited about this event. We're world premiering a new restoration of the film.
Oh,
in anticipation of a new home video release, we'll have both Michael Rooker, the star, who I'm a very big fan of. I think recent film fans will recognize him from the Guardians of the Galaxy. He's sort of been making a resurgence in big movies as well. He's a really great character actor. And for those who haven't seen Henry, I would highly recommend it. It is a Chicago classic film. It was shot here. It was made here. And the director, John McNaughton, will also be with us.
Cool.
I'll be having a Q&A after the film with both of them. And I think it's going to be, and again, for you know, but for those who haven't seen Henry, it's a really unique and uniquely terrifying experience.
Terrifying, creepy, those are all adjectives that fit that film perfectly, I think.
It is
crazy. Well, since I've got you, Alex, I gave you fair warning. Now, you've got a wonderful program for the After Dark program. As I said, I know of Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. I'm looking at this other list. If you had to pick a couple, other than Henry, which you already talked about, looking forward to that, What would you recommend if people were going to come and you say, all right, see the, if you're going to see any, see this one or two?
Oh, man. Like you said, that's a really difficult question. Because
I know. That's why I gave you a lot of time.
Well, I'll highlight a couple that sort of go beyond what people think of After Dark and what I sort of tried to, you know, it goes beyond just, you know, your run-of-the-mill horror movies.
Right.
I have a really exciting martial arts movie from Indonesia in here called Headshot, which is, you know, like, if anybody's seen the films, they're called The Raid. There's been a lot of really great films coming out of Indonesia, and especially martial arts films. A lot of really, really talented martial artists and some exciting bone-crunching action and amazing stunt work. There are just so many moments in this movie where I had to pick my jaw up off the floor because I couldn't believe what I had seen.
Nice.
Some of the stunt work going on in there. It sort of plays like The Bourne Identity. The main character has amnesia. He wakes up not knowing who he is, but there's this crime syndicate that's after him, and he learns very quickly that he is very, very good at hurting people very badly with his hands, and he sort of has to fight his way through the criminal underworld to rediscover his past, figure out what happened to him.
I'm sold. That's sounds right up my alley. Now, please tell me this is subtitled and not with the bad voice dubbing.
Oh yes, no, it is subtitled.
Okay,
all
good.
These movies are subtitled.
Good. I don't want to see the mouth move and then the dialogue come out a minute later.
Oh yeah, no, not nothing like that.
All right, so we're going to After Dark. We're going to see Headshot. We're going to see Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, and then because I want to broaden my horizons, and I know there's some shorts in the After Dark program as well, but I want to wander over, Sam, to your program, the Short Films program, and broaden my horizons. So if again, I know I'm putting you on the spot, but give me a couple that I should see.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there are 47 this year, and they're grouped into 7 different programs. They're all so good. I think the documentary program is particularly strong this year, so that's 6 short documentaries, and there's one in there. It's a world premiere of a short called Balloon Fest, and that's a found footage movie. It's all news footage from 1986, and it was this balloon festival that Cleveland put on, and the idea was that the city of Cleveland was going to release the world record amount of balloons into the sky all at once. So it's sort of, and that comes with some human and environmental consequences. So it's just a short, it's just a 7-minute movie, and it's about this balloon festival that took place, and it's sort of the consequences of the hubris of middle America.
That sounds
very
cool.
Balloon Fest. I love that one so much.
And for 7 minutes, that's an investment I think anybody could make.
Yeah, I think so too.
I am too busy to waste 7 minutes of my life.
Yeah.
No, that sounds wonderful. Well, guys, it is. It sounds like another wonderful fest. Congratulations on the 52nd year of the Chicago International Film Festival. Runs October 13th through the 27th. Go to chicagofilmfestival.com or call 312-332-3456. All the information. It's happening at the AMC River East, 21322 East Illinois Street. Go check it out. You will not be disappointed. Sam Fletcher and Alex Vasquez, thank you so much for your time this morning, and best of luck with the fest.
Thanks very much.
Take care. My pleasure. Brian Noonan for Nick on 720 WGN. The regular Nick D features coming up after about 3:40. We'll do You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, and then, of course, Fly Jam Friday. Which is always fun. I've had a chance to do that before, so it's good to be back and able to do that again. Vic is also keeping an eye on what's happening in Florida with the hurricane, so we are all over that. There's a lot going on. And then I'm scrolling through social media. I see Esmeralda post something about a flow chart, and I say to myself, this can't be real, that men still holler out things at women on the street. They catcall women. Listen, I'm as randy as the next gentleman. I have never, even if I, I got busted the other night, actually, for looking at a group of young ladies that wandered by. We were standing on the street, because that's what I like to do. I start a garbage can on fire, I sing doo-wop songs, and I watch women walk by. That's my Saturday. I live in the suburbs. Call me straight, call me square. I don't know what you want to call me. But no, I was out in front of, I'd gone out to dinner after my show, because I don't know if, you probably heard me mention, real quick, I'm in Tony and Tina's Wedding. I'm in the new production of Tony and Tina's Wedding. So my brothers and my mom came to the show last Saturday night, and we went out a couple doors down to a Mexican place and had some dinner after the show. So I'm standing out there. Now everybody is gone except one of my brothers and my wife. So we're standing there talking, and my niece, who's like 12. So this is a horrible time to get busted. But I'm in the city, and my head's on a swivel because I'm always on the lookout for some ne'er-do-wells who are going to shiv me or something. I trust no one in the city. Well, I use that as an excuse because large gaggles of women are constantly wandering down Belmont Avenue. They're calling attention to themselves with their loud talk. Again, I'm making excuses for turning my head. Not just that I'm an old man who's like, wow, look at all those women. But I'm talking to my brother, and my back's to the sidewalk, which makes me nervous anyway. That part is true. I don't like having my back to a lot of people. That comes from my bouncer days when, you know, you always keep your back to the wall. I'm like a gunfighter, Dan. I'm like Wyatt Earp. I got to keep my back to the wall. I don't want anybody sneaking up on me.
Can you sit in a restaurant with your face not at the door?
I got to be watching the door. And it's not that I'm like Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse. It's not like I've built up a list of enemies who are looking for me all the time. It's just from back in those days, we always stood with our backs right against the wall because stuff would jump off, as the kids like to say. And I had to be ready. Isn't that what the kids say, Esmeralda? Things will jump off?
Sure.
Is that what happens when things jump off? I don't know. Fights would happen. There would be activity that I needed to go break up. So we always kept our backs to the wall, and now I do that all the time. So I'm standing on the curb with my back to the sidewalk, and my brother is leaning on his car, and my wife is leaning on a street pole. This is like something out of Guys and Dolls. As I describe it now, it sounds awful, except that my zoot suit fits me perfectly, and I can swing that watch like nobody's business without even spitting on my spats. So I'm standing there, and don't worry, I'll get back to the flow chart that I mentioned at the beginning, which is how this all started. Just kind of like this conversation. There's a flow chart that goes in a million different directions, and then it all funnels back to the bottom. Well, I guess, according to my wife, who gave me a subtle, I thought she was just trying to be affectionate and like hold my hand at one point. She gave me a little like tap on the hand, because I guess I turned my head when a group of women walked by. But I was just, again, there's a huge group behind me, so I turned my head. And yes, they happen to be women, but I did it when there were a group of frat boys walking by me, too. So in my defense, I look at everybody because I'm curious, George. That's how I operate. My head's on a swivel, as I said before. But I guess I was called out on Sunday for eyeing a bunch of women. But back to the point, I didn't catcall any of them, especially in front of my wife, brother, and niece. That would have been the most boorish behavior known to man. Hold on a minute, honey. I got to look at the games on that broad. Because that's how I would catcall. I would be wildly unsuccessful as a catcaller, I believe. That's, Esmeralda, in the hierarchy of catcalls, that probably would have been one of the worst, right?
Well, the fact that it sounds very old-timey.
Well, that, I go retro.
Might get you somewhere.
You think that? Well, because I've got the new retro glasses, so I do. I looked at myself in the mirror today because this is the first pair of glasses I've ever had to get. They got approved by my daughter, but some of the young members of the cast have told me they look good. I don't know, but I looked at myself in the mirror today with the shirt I'm wearing, my haircut, and these retro glasses, and I'm like, oh, my God, I look like an extra from Mississippi Burning. Like, I should just be some redneck sitting on a porch or like an old school football coach making kids run till they drop dead in the heat.
You need a little hat.
Like a fedora?
Yeah, like I'm thinking of like Lambeau.
Like a beanie?
Who's the Packers?
Vince coach. Lombardi?
Yes.
I need a Vince Lombardi.
Because didn't he kind of have those?
He did wear, yeah, everybody.
And that little hat.
Everything's old-timey about me, Esmeralda, especially my hips. They still swivel, but they're very old-timey. They creak, but
what?
They still got
yeah,
the
most. What type of suit did you wear to my wedding? That was an old-timey suit.
Oh, my seersucker suit?
Yeah, your seersucker suit.
Everything. Oh, very nice.
Yeah, see? Thank you, Esmeralda.
You got lots of compliments. Sucker. People knew.
I am,
rock the bow tie.
I'm a style monster. Everything about me screams fashion plate. Everything. Except my look, my attitude. That would be about it. Nothing about me screams fashion plate. But I did, the reason I had the seersucker, and I just got a new seersucker, a different color. Because now I'm all about it. But now the season is over, so I won't be able to break it out until next summer. But that was something I had always wanted when I was fat, was a seersucker suit. But a 400-pound guy in a seersucker suit looks like another extra from Mississippi Burning. Just a guy sitting on the podium. Oh, Lord, it's hot out here. That's, then I get the big Panama hat and a pitcher of lemonade. And I go, whoo, what's going on over there? I say, oh, boy, that's what a 400-pound guy in a seersucker suit looks like. Thinner guy in a seersucker suit just looks like a guy in a seersucker suit. All right, but back to this thing that Esmeralda posted. This is all your fault, Esmeralda. Because you posted this. But I found it fascinating. It's an old chart. Old being it was first put out in 2014. It's a flow chart telling guys if they should or should not catcall a woman. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, no, you never should. Now, as you're a woman, Esmeralda, mm-hmm. Last time I checked, and I don't mean to,
yes.
Who knows. Have you ever been, does that happen? Have you been catcalled on the street?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I think every woman has been catcalled.
Is it? Now, all right. What concept is just saying hello, is that considered a catcall? Where does the line go from just, hey, how's it going?
It depends how that hello is given.
Hello.
Yeah, if it's like a slimy hello.
Right.
Then, yeah, I think it's totally because they're trying to pick you up or whatever.
Right.
But I've gotten yelled at.
Really?
Is it all
construction workers? I know that's the old stereotype.
No, not at all.
Guys sitting up on the beams
not
with their
at
hard
all.
Hats.
I've walked by construction sites. Never. I get nothing.
Okay. Don't sound so disappointed.
Just walking down the street, though.
I get nothing.
Walking down the street.
Really?
Regular old dudes.
Huh. 312-981-7200. Ladies, how have you dealt with this? And guys, really? You want to fess up? Do you really think this is going to work? It's like the old Mr. Microphone commercial. You're driving, hey, baby, I'll be back to pick you up in a minute. Would that impress you if I had that kind of technology? If I was rocking that kind of high-tech gear? Because, then things will jump off.
Right. Also, if you had that nasally tone.
I think it's time we liven it up with my favorite Christmas gift, Mr. Microphone.
Hey, what's that?
Well, you set the dial on your FM radio and testing.
I'm on the radio. Yeah.
These kids are having
that's
a
how I feel every time I'm here.
Microphone.
Hey, I'm on the radio.
The coolest microphone that actually puts your voice on the radio. There are no attaching wires, so you're free to move around. Broadcast over any FM car radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
I blame Mr. Microphone for all the bad morning zoos because then everybody thought they could be on the radio. That was the problem.
And then some did.
I know. And they made it. Now they're huge, making millions. All right. So the reason I brought this up, one, is because I can't believe it. And two, I'm wondering how, ladies, you react to this. So here's kind of the flow chart. And I think you'll start to see where this is going. The first question, is that booty banging? Which is every time I put on a pair of pants, that's my first question. I turn around. I do a little spin. Is that booty banging? Answer yes, I go out of the house. Answer no, I get those padded underpants to make give me a little Kim K look. That's how I do it. The shapers, is that what you call them? So if it's there's two ways. You go hells yeah, and then you move over to the does she have those legs that go on for days? And then it goes down and the thighs. Is she dressed real nice? All these things. If you're answering yes, it goes down that way. Is she literally a cat? It'd be no. It all boils down to, through all these questions, unless you know a woman and you have both consensually agreed to shout sexually suggestive comments to each other in public, the answer is no. It is never. And you would think Playboy would go, yeah, you know, here's the best way to try to pick up a lady on the street. But even Playboy said, no, guys, this is never going to work. Which, I mean, again, when it's been a while since I was single. But I never would have considered that. And I only because I who would fall for that? Because honestly, if you could pull a woman off the street by yelling something at her, she was willing to go anyway. She was just standing there going, please, somebody say something to me so I can go with you. Right? That's not a good move. I don't know. What's the worst thing you've ever had yelled at you, Esmeralda?
I couldn't tell you.
Do they get real specific?
No. I mean, usually I've been on my bike and I've gotten catcalled.
Really?
So I'm, you know, biking away. But yeah.
Is it ever just a lot of guys will do the, hey, smile a little bit.
Oh, no, I got that one once.
Yeah?
And it just.
Did you punch the guy in the throat?
I would have if I had time. But for some reason, I just kind of, I didn't know what to think.
I am real busy.
Yeah, and then 10 seconds later, I got really mad. I was like, I should have chased him down.
That's one I never, and that happens not just on the street. You see that in bars. You see that at grocery stores. I saw a guy try to work a girl at the gym the other day. And I'm like, where do you get the energy to try to work a girl at the gym when she's obviously there to work out? I would never, maybe it's just me. I would never have the stones to try to make that move. See a woman working out and then stroll over to her in my tight sleeveless t-shirt. Hey, look at me. I don't wear a tight sleeveless t-shirt to the gym. I like a looser sleeveless t-shirt when I go to the gym. More mesh because it breathes. But I think Esmeralda just threw up in her mouth a little bit.
Just a little.
Picturing me in a mesh t-shirt brought dinner back up, did it? I don't blame you. It's a horrifying visual that I paint. All right, let's do this. And then since we're on the subject of relationships, ladies, gentlemen, no matter how honest your relationship is, do you ever check your partner's phone and get upset by what is on there? Well, Amy was asked that question. So we'll get involved in that on the other side. 720 WGN. Ryan for Nick on 720 WGN. All of Nick's regular features coming up in the next hour or so. We'll start them at about, I don't know, when do we start those, Dan? About 3:40-ish?
Typically about 3:40-ish.
3:40-ish. Well, listen, then if that's what you typically do, then why would I stray from that? What am I here to cause trouble? Make waves?
No, not at all.
Catcall women?
By the way, we should probably mention that since the last time you did Fly James Friday, all of us have been given a nickname.
Is that right?
Yeah, Fly James nickname, so we might have to ask listeners for a Fly Jam Brian Noon nickname.
Sure, I would love that because I don't believe nicknames should ever be bestowed by the person who will have them. I can't bestow my own Fly Jam nickname.
Right.
And judging by the fact that Esmeralda threw up picturing me in a mesh shirt, I don't know if I would trust her.
That is a Fly Jam outfit.
That is a Fly Jam outfit because I pair it with some high-waisted pleather pants and the platform shoes, even though I don't need
to
platform
work out?
Shoes. Oh, not to work out.
Oh, okay.
No, I wear shorts when I work out.
That's a way to attract the ladies, though, if you're wearing
platform shoes.
You think
so? There's a guy at the gym. I am always, because I'm one of those people, I focus on my workout, and I have my headphones on, so I'm not, you know, a gadfly. But I do pay attention to people around me, because as I mentioned earlier, when I was after I've been chastised now for looking at other women when I was, I do keep my head on a swivel wherever I am. There's a guy who comes. There's guys who work out in jeans. There's a guy who works out in cargo shorts and work boots. I don't know if he's coming to or from work. There's a lot of these guys now. Esmeralda, you would know this. You're a much younger woman than I am, because I'm an old woman. There's this new craze of pants coming back that have the wide piece of elastic around the ankle, so they look like pajamas from when you were a little kid.
Oh, do you mean, so they kind of look like genie pants?
Kind of.
Big crotch?
Yes, they're kind of sweats, but they're kind of genie pants and kind of pajamas and kind of make you look like you dropped a deuce in your drawers.
Yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys who wear those.
Justin Bieber's a big fan of those.
Sure. Well, I work out with Justin Bieber.
Do you?
Sure. He and I actually use him for curls. I just curl Justin Bieber, 3 sets of 12, because he only weighs 118 pounds. So, but But so there's all kinds of weirdness happening at the gym. And I'm always amazed. There's a guy, I got to tell you, and I had other things to talk about, but now that the gym came up, there's a guy who was rocking the most unbelievable mullet you have ever seen. Imagine Billy Ray Cyrus back in the day. This is a guy who comes in, and he's in pretty good shape, but he also wears jorts when he's working out, which, again, not a good look, right, Esmeralda? I try to figure out what the ladies would like.
Yeah, jorts just, ugh. Were they carpenter jean?
I don't believe they were carpenter jorts. And they're not cutoffs. So he didn't have just raggedy jeans that he cut off. They're actually hemmed jorts. So he wears those. But this mullet is magnificent. And it's coiffed perfectly. And you know there's a lot of Aquanet on there, or White Rain, or whatever cheap hairspray he can find at Walmart, because it's perfect. It's like, remember when your grandma used to go to the beauty parlor and she would then come out with the little like sheer scarf over her hair so it wouldn't blow in the breeze? This guy, it looks like he comes to the gym wearing that but takes it off before he walks in, because there is not a mullet hair out of place. It's a salt and peppery mullet. And there's a part of me that wants to mock it. And yet there's a part of me, I'm not going to lie, that is unbelievably envious, because I see this mullet and I weep for the hair that I do not have.
You don't see many salt and pepper mullets. So
no.
If you had to guess, how old is this gentleman?
He's got to be mid to late 40s, pushing 50, but still hanging on to his Trans Am / Camaro / Stroh's 12-pack high school party vibe. And I like it.
Party in the back.
Oh, sure, because he's business up front. But are you business up front if you're wearing a cutoff sleeve T-shirt and jorts?
Well, I mean, we don't know what he wears to his business.
Maybe that is his business. maybe just strolling around is his. Looking good is my business.
Maybe he works for the jorts company.
Perhaps. Is there an official jorts company?
Oh, I hope not.
Do you think he markets jorts to all the big jean manufacturers? Hello, Mr. Levi Strauss. Can I interest you in jorts? No, we actually make men's pants. All right. Then I'm going to go to Wrangler. Oh, I don't think cowboys are going to wear jorts. Who wears jorts?
That guy.
Guys with mullets. Again, if you're putting a business model together, if you're going to a bank for a loan and your prospectus is, I have a beautiful idea for a garment, a men's garment. I think a lot of guys will wear it. Oh, really, sir? What is it? Bear with me. It's jorts. It's jeans. You're familiar with jeans? Oh, yes. We've given loans to a number of jeans manufacturers. Denim is very hot now, especially salvage jean. All that kind of vintage jeans are very big. Are your jeans vintage? No, they're shorts. Oh. So they're jean shorts. Yes, they're jorts. Yes, they're jorts.
But they're so specific.
Right.
Because they're longer. And then I don't know what... Is there like a straight leg jean that they were made from?
I don't know.
So they look real. They look like mom jeans.
Yes, they do tend to come up a little higher. And I had a pair of jorts back in like the 80s.
Right.
When they were hip. They were never hip. When they were more acceptable, I guess. Let's put it that way. When, you know, before things jumped off, I had some jean shorts. But
were you rocking them during your bouncer days?
Oh, no. I think, of course, when I bounced, I couldn't wear shorts because you never knew when things were going to jump off. So you had to have pants on. No, I wore long pants. I wore grown man pants. You know what I won't do? I won't go anywhere to have a drink where there's not a ball pit. I will explain after the news. There's a tease for you. That's right. That means we're buying a plane ticket, Esmeralda. Stay tuned. We'll get to that on the other side. It's 720 WGN. It's the Nick DeGiulio Show on 720 WGN. Nick is on vacation for the next week. It's me, Brian Noonan. I will be with you all week. So I am very excited to be back in the overnights. And thankful to Nick and Dan and everybody for letting me sit in. I think I may have insulted one of our brethren here at WGN. And my jorts, as I was tearing down everybody who wears jorts, I get a text from the 224 that says, Bill Leff wears jorts. Now, I love Bill Leff. I've known Bill Leff for years. I didn't know Bill Leff was a Jort guy. I hope this does not get back to him in a way that will hurt his feelings. He's a grown man. He can wear what he wants. I think we just need to update him a little bit on his shorts. I have no problem with a guy wearing shorts, even into the cooler weather. I'm a big short guy. I have all sorts of shorts. My shorts collection is the hugest shorts collection ever. I got most of them in China. They're fantastic shorts. But jorts, you got to dump the jorts. Who thinks that? At some point you just stop worrying what other people think?
I mean, probably.
You know,
I think that's what happens with most people who wear jorts.
Yeah, because Bill's married. He's been married a long time. He's got two college-age daughters. He's got a good job. He's got a great radio partner in Wendy. He probably doesn't care how he looks. He doesn't need to care how he looks. Right? Yeah. He's on the radio.
You know what they should do?
Huh?
Programming note, they should do this. Also, promotions.
Let's get him on the horn.
Marketing.
Wake him up.
They should get one of those people to kind of make him over. Give him, like, some new outfits.
Well, the texter says Bill's proud of his jorts. So, listen, the guy wants
to wear
jorts.
Maybe they could convince him to find a substitute.
Maybe a nice
jorts.
Maybe he transitions. Now, I know jorts are out. Mm-hmm. Cargo shorts get a bad rap, even though I'm a fan of cargo shorts. Not the big billowy cargo shorts. You can go with a slimmer fit. Maybe we transition him into a nice cargo short.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't. A slim cargo short.
I'm going to say he does have a pair now. Because there was that
cargo shorts?
That phenomena like a couple of weeks ago about cargo shorts and only jerks wear cargo shorts, so he was forced to defend himself.
You know what? I am going to side with him on this. I find cargo shorts, not for all occasions, but perhaps I'm going somewhere where I want to go hiking or something. And I like to have, I carry cargo when I go.
So you like them when they're used appropriately.
I do. I like to put my phone in one of the pockets because those cargo pockets are great for your phone, your wallet, things like that. I don't know, whatever cargo you carry. I'm not going to tell you what to carry on your own walk. But yeah.
Swiss Army knife.
A Swiss Army knife, perhaps a big machete. I like to put the ears of my victims in my cargo pockets. All that kind of stuff.
You know, I think all right, so cargo shorts, I think, aren't bad. It's just sometimes the cut are too big. Like you said, the billowy ones, no good.
Yeah, you can go with a slim, and they don't, when I say slimmer fit, you've seen guys, and I've seen guys too, where the slim fit shorts are so slim fitting. It's like, oh, seriously? What are you smuggling there?
Yeah.
Grape nuts? I don't need to get involved in that.
But you can, there's
a happy medium.
More fitted.
So we get Bill from the jorts into a more tapered cargo short. Then maybe we move him into a Madras Bermuda.
Oh, that sounds nice.
We take him way out of his comfort zone.
See, this is like food to me.
Yeah.
It's a thing of, oh, I don't like broccoli. I think you probably just have eaten broccoli that's been prepared disgustingly,
right,
and that's why you hate it.
So try something new.
Yeah. So if we try, you know, something different.
But you'll back me up on this, Dan and Esmeralda. You know, and women are like this, too. Some people just like what they like. They're comfortable wearing a certain thing, and they don't ever want to change. My dad was a pretty stylish guy, but he would only wear button-down collar shirts.
That's me.
Yeah,
kind of nice. That's nice, though. That's
it was
a
nice classic look. Yeah, but I'm saying, like, he wouldn't, and he had nice suits because he had to wear a suit every day to work. He had nice shoes, but he would never go like for a spread collar shirt. That was not it. When you wear a suit, you wear a button down shirt. And I'm like, okay, but there's times when, you know, a button down shirt is great for some things, and then maybe a spread collar looks a little, you know, for a guy who was all about, you know, looking good, he that was his place where he would not vary, and everybody has that thing. So maybe Bill's is the jorts.
See, but I had the opposite.
Yes.
I had an ex who would never, he wouldn't try on different cuts of jeans or a shirt with buttons.
You wouldn't wear a shirt with buttons?
Yeah, he didn't really like, you know, like
so
a collared shirt
like
with
a
buttons.
T-shirt?
Yeah, all he wore was T-shirts.
Oh my God, what was he, 12?
What happened?
Exactly.
Did you ever have to go to somewhere nicer with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he would. I think
he would bust out the tuxedo
shirt. Something. Yeah. He had a polo or something. It was just things, and he wouldn't change. He didn't like it because you didn't like it. And now he's my ex. So there you go.
Well, you know what? You have to be able. If you're an adult, you have to be able to dress
right
for certain occasions.
Yeah, no, I always told him that too.
Yes, I mean, I love being casual. I rarely wear pants, but I'm wearing actual jeans tonight. But I love shorts and t-shirts and stuff. But sometimes you have to put on a suit.
But also you can be casual yet
and look still
nice. Look
sharp.
Exactly.
Right. You wear like a nice pair of a nice shirt and some nice shorts that aren't, you know, blossomy, so when you sit down people can see all the way up to your bikini area.
Was this ex-boyfriend, was he just trying to make a statement, or did he not feel
lazy?
Comfortable, or like
he just didn't feel comfortable. He didn't like it.
Was it that he never like and I wonder about this. Sometimes when guys do not want to, you know, they only want to dress one. Like, maybe they never, as a kid, never had to dress up, or they didn't see anybody.
Most likely.
In their family never really dressed up.
Yeah, most likely. I would try to get him, and he wouldn't do it. And then what cracked me up is when we broke up, that's when he stopped wearing t-shirts with cartoons on them and things like that. And I was like, oh, now you do it. Fine.
Sure.
Because no other woman will date you. Cool.
Well, listen, you're better off without him.
Oh, no, I'm completely.
Want some scrub? You don't want no scrubs, right?
It's a fly jam.
It is a fly jam. Maybe we bring that back. And then you can start, talking about my nickname, my fly jam nickname. But enough of that. Enough of Bill Left's fashion faux pas. We move on to something else. It's time, Dan, for You Big Dummy.
Here's Dummy. You big dummy.
You big dummy. See what you did?
Oh, no. You big dummy.
You dummy.
All right. It is Friday morning, and it is time for You Big Dummy, one of Nick D's regular features. So let's get to it, shall we? Dummy number one. Authorities say a fugitive's desire for a donut helped police capture a wanted man. Oh, donuts are the downfall of all stupid criminals. According to the criminal complaint, Hobbs police responded about 2:20 p.m. Monday after a shoplifting report. A store employee told the responding officer that Gregory Mendoza had taken a donut and eaten it before trying to leave the store. Mendoza allegedly admitted to eating the donut and gave police a different first name and claimed to be 18 years old. Police then discovered the 35-year-old Mendoza. How do you try to pass yourself off as 18 when you're 35? This had to be Hollywood. He was wanted on 10 pending charges, including aggravated fleeing a law enforcement officer, concealing identity, driving while license revoked, driving while license suspended, and several other violations.
Dummy. Dummy.
Dummy, dummy is correct. Oh, what a dummy. All right, let's move on, shall we, to dummy number two. Dummy number two. Oh, coming from Florida. That's where a lot of dummies live. Southwest Florida Crime Stoppers is asking for the public's help identifying an unknown burglar. Ironically, his picture was captured by the surveillance cameras that he stole. Around 10:30 a.m. on Sunday, why are these guys committing all these crimes in the middle of the day? Around 10:30 a.m. on Sunday, an unknown male was seen on surveillance footage riding a red bicycle on the property of the El Dorado pawn shop. Did I just say El Dorado pawn shop? El Dorado pawn shop. After loitering around...
Lots of cameras there, too.
I guess. Yeah, but they're all faced the wrong way. After loitering around the parking lot for a few minutes, the man knelt down and attempted to squeeze through the fence. When that didn't work, he proceeded to cut a hole in the fence to gain access to the rear of the business. Seeing if that's... Oh, no. Once inside the compound... Oh, the pawn shop has a compound? What are they, the Kennedys? Footage shows him dismantling the outdoor video surveillance system until the system was finally shut down. However, the recorder managed to capture crystal clear images of the suspect before it was disabled. In total, six surveillance cameras were cut and stolen from the outside of the business. Anyone with information on the identity or whereabouts of the suspect is asked to call Crime Stoppers. Call us first, and then call Crime Stoppers, because we want an exclusive. I'm trying to be my generation's Russ Ewing.
La-dee-dee, they la-dee-dum is dummy. Just Donna and me, and the dummy makes three.
Just dummy and me, and the dummy makes three, and we will continue, You Big Dummy. Ah, yes, we are in the middle of You Big Dummy on the Nick D Show. We are at dummy number 3. It pays to be aware of your surroundings. That's the lesson one man learned. That's what I've been telling you all night. Keep your head on a swivel, Dan. One man learned that as he engaged in a road rage incident in front of a police station. Bad timing. After a bicyclist accused the man of blowing a stop sign and almost hitting him, the driver, Brian Copeland, stopped his car and pulled out a weapon on the bicyclist right across the street from a Hillsborough County Sheriff's District office. In addition, there was a deputy in full view standing in front of the building. When the bicyclist allegedly told Copeland, quote, "There's a cop right there," end quote, the driver laughed, apparently not seeing the officer. "Ha ha, sure there is. Oops." The officer called for backup, which emptied out the whole station, leading to the man's arrest. Oh, you are a dummy. Dummy number 4. Sarasota County deputies arrested a man after discovering a large amount of drugs in his car while he was playing Pokemon Go. Well, serves you right if you're playing Pokemon Go as a grown man. Law enforcement said they smelled marijuana coming from a car parked in Erfur Park around midnight Monday morning. When deputies approached Guillermo Cavanunez, 20, he told them he was meeting his girlfriend to play the popular game at the park. After Cavanunez agreed to a search of his vehicle, authorities found more than 66 Xanax bars, more than 6 grams of marijuana, 2 grams of hash oil, and other drug paraphernalia. At what point do you realize it's probably not a good idea to let the cops search your car? Oh, I forgot all about the 66 Xanax bars. What are you, Cheech and Chong? This isn't Nice Dreams. You gotta... How do you forget you have all that in your car? Dan, you've smuggled a lot of drugs in your time. You were a mule.
That's true.
You were a mule for the cartels right. Back in 89.
Right.
How did you... Would you ever forget?
When I was 8.
That's right. They used... they love to use children. Nobody looks at children as a mule.
Nope.
No.
I would have said no.
Yes, you would have said no.
Legal shirt, I'd be like, get your warrant.
Well, look at you, Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, or whatever Law and Order franchise you're watching at the moment.
Criminal Intent.
That's a better one, right?
Oh, sure. Or Chicago Law, Chicago PD, one of the Chicago shows. He was arrested and charged with 4 counts of drug possession. He's being held on an $11,500 bond. And now, finally, dummy number 5. A 59-year-old man who wore a bikini fashioned out of see-through plastic wrap is facing a criminal charge. Suddenly, my mesh T-shirt doesn't sound so bad, does it, Esmeralda? I don't think so. Beach Haven police said Stephen Wojciechowski spent 2 days on a Long Beach Island beach wearing a homemade bikini in which his genitals were clearly exposed. I'm gonna let you paint that picture. A man in a saran wrap bikini, sweaty, sand and grit in his area. The department posted censored pictures of the man on its Facebook page, and yet I paint a completely uncensored oral picture. A-U-R-A-L, for those of you playing along at home, on the Spell What Brian Says game, which is a game nobody plays other than me. Anyway, they posted these pictures on Facebook last week, asking for help in identifying him. Is anybody looking at any part of this guy other than the saran wrap bikini? Does anybody even know he has a head to try, well, a face to try to identify him? Of course not. The Stafford Township man, well, he was arrested Monday and charged with lewdness. He was released pending further court proceedings. Why would you, if you're going to do that, why even wear the saran wrap?
Have you seen his picture?
I haven't.
He looks like someone.
That's an NSFW.
No, but they have post. An article has his picture, his mugshot.
Yeah, how's that working out?
He looks like such a nice man.
Well, sure.
He's a gray-haired man. He looks good. He's wearing a collared shirt.
See,
a nice pattern on it.
Sure, you'd date him till you got down to his saran wrap underpants. Then you go, suddenly things aren't as good.
Researching this article, there were some suggestions.
You researched this article,
There were
you?
Some suggestions that he did it because it would help him avoid tan lines, which didn't make any sense to me.
Well,
I don't know if it does. Is it like when you're in your car, you can't get tan through the window, but you can get sunburned?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never gone to the beach in just saran wrap.
yet.
But, yeah, well, I was just about to say, but now that we have a challenge thrown down, now that we have to do some show research, now that I know you research stuff, Dan, I feel I would be remiss if I didn't do any research on my own. That would make, what kind of lazy host would that be? So if on Monday you do a special edition of You Big Dummy and a 53-year-old man who's arrested on the lakeshore for wearing nothing but a saran wrap. I'm going to go saran wrap one piece, though, because I want to be more modest.
You should do a little halter top.
Oh, that would be nice.
Yeah.
Sure. So I could get all manscaped. All right. A woman who answered the phone at his house said nobody's here and hung up. It's unclear if he has an attorney who could comment on his behalf. We'll comment on his behalf.
Have you ever seen him act?
I've been watching him act all his life. Like a dummy. All his life. Like a dummy.
Like a dummy. Like a dummy. All right. Now we have to pick our winner. So to recap, dummy number one, the dummy criminal who got caught because he ate a donut without paying. That's pretty dumb. Dummy number two, the dummy who stole security cameras and gave police a clear view of his face. Dummy number three, a dummy who engaged in a road rage incident right in front of the police station. Dummy number four is the dummy who was playing Pokemon Go with a car full of drugs. And dummy number five, the dummy who wore clear plastic wrap as a swimsuit to the beach.
I mean, I didn't know you were interested in gardening.
Why not?
Well, up to now, the only thing you've grown is dumber and dumber.
All right. So, Dan, do we go around the horn?
We do go around the horn. Vic Vaughn might be actually just doing his job.
Vic's very busy doing news stuff.
So
he just got a report of a man on the beach with a saran wrap bathing suit.
Yeah, I do love a donut, and I think you could go to jail for that. I do love the fact that he was breaking into a pawn shop. And the segments, we obviously Sanford and Son is used so prominently. But I think I have to go with dummy number five, the saran wrap.
Dummy number five gets a vote. All right, Esmeralda.
Saran wrap, come on.
Wow, not even a hesitation.
Saran wrap bikini.
Saran wrap bikini is the one. I got to be honest. I like Dan at first. I was like, oh, the guy who eats a donut. The guy with the car full of drugs almost had it till was he 53 or 59-year-old guy decides, 59, that he doesn't want tan lines, so he's going to go in a saran wrap bikini. So he is our big winner.
The only reason I call you a dummy is because I call them as I see them.
All right, let's do this. And then on the other side of the news, it's Straight Out of Context and Fly Jams Friday and your chance to weigh in on my Fly Jams nickname, because I'm doing it this Friday morning and next Friday morning. So, if it's a good enough nickname, we can use it twice. We'll do all of that after this, WGN. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as hell. F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of context, context, context. Context. What's up? Tell them where you're from. Straight out of context, 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 context. Oh, yes, it's a Nick DiGilio show on a Friday morning. That means it is time for Straight Out of Context. Brian in for Nick, who is on vacation. All right, Dan, I know how this works, but in case people don't.
Yes, during the week, please listen to all 24 hours a day of WGN Radio. And then if you hear somebody who says something dirty, something that could be funny out of context, please email us at nickdshow@gmail.com. We compile them at the end of the week and present it to you. So first up, an emailer heard this one of Mark Carmen.
I'm laying in my bed. I want some stimulation.
That doesn't surprise me about Carmen. He's always looking for a little hand action. Mm-hmm. Something, I don't know.
Tim submitted this one of Wendy Snyder.
I measured out how big I wanted it.
Wendy, listen, I don't think Wendy opens her mouth without something coming out that could be used on this segment. And I love Wendy, but she's got some thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sean emailed this one of Bill Leff.
Stop moaning if it's a small one.
And he wasn't talking about his jorts at all.
Our own Mike Jacobson sent in this one of our own Steve Grzanich.
Orion, it wouldn't be Friday if you didn't make my mouth water.
Wow. You got a bromance going on over there? What's going on with that?
Dirty Dave emailed this one of Bill Luff.
It started big, it tapered off, and ended big. And if I may recreate a little bit of it, sure. You went, ah!
I don't know what goes on in that studio during the day.
And it's out on the showcase. People can see that.
People can see what they're up to. Do maybe they not realize that?
Maybe that's why we're up here rather than down there.
Yeah, it's probably best.
Brian sent in this one of Rokan.
Yeah, hey, eat that all day.
Wow. They got a lot going on in the afternoon, too. I don't know.
Oh, just you wait.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my.
Jensberg AJ heard this one of Dean Richards.
I was big into slip and slide.
I love the Nick D listeners. They got a lot of time to, you know, they're scouring this station for things.
Absolutely.
And they pick out everything.
Greg in Milwaukee submitted this one of Patty.
Feel the Johnson.
That doesn't surprise me. I'm not shocked at all by that out-of-context quote. Well, maybe it's not out-of-context.
Hey, you never know.
Maybe it's completely on the money.
Wild Bill emailed this one of Roger Badish.
Easy on the screw.
What can I say about Roger? I love him. He's a lunatic.
Mark heard this one of Mike Steven.
You needed the second hand just to get it up.
Wow. Again, how many of these are truly out of context? And how many of these are just, you know, that's what these guys were doing?
He may have been talking about a beer mug. He may not have been.
Mike's up early on a Saturday morning. He's got things on his mind.
Ryan submitted this one of Frank Fontana.
Do you just exclusively do Steve now? Is that it?
I think that's personal. It's none of your business, Frank. We don't judge here. What kind of hijinks you got going on your show on Sundays?
A texter gives us this one of Nick DiGilio.
Yes, I enjoy Jay's beef. I'm sitting in for Nick. I'm not going to make any comments about what Nick says and whose beef he enjoys or if it's dipped.
You're going to be very quiet towards spicy. The end of this segment, I'll tell you that.
Listen, this whole thing is very scary.
Jesse heard this one of Dean Richards.
We are men of many tongues.
Yeah.
Wow. How do you like that? How do you like that one, Esmeralda? Man of many tongues. You ever date a guy with more than one tongue?
No.
That's how you know, she's dating V.
Oh, that's right. But he has one tongue, but it's forked.
Right.
It's a long lizardy tongue with the two prongs on there. Some sort of European erotic tongue.
Lucky Esmeralda.
Yeah, how about it?
Steven,
<Good for you. laughs>
Steven Oakbrook emailed this one. A Violetta Podramatic.
Oh, my.
I think I know why some are bigger and some are smaller.
I want to hear the rest of that. I want to hear Violetta explain. Give us a clinic on why that is.
Growth.
On growth, yes.
Steven Oakbrook also sent in this one of Esmeralda's favorite, Lou Manfredini.
Oh.
You mentioned the rod.
Somehow, I picture Lou saying that with his hands on his hips, very proudly. Chest puffed out. You mentioned the rod.
Great head of hair.
Oh, I hear it's a wonderful head of hair. I'm going to stop him on the street and ask him about it.
He loves talking about it.
I hear that's okay. Normally, I wouldn't do that, but Lou told me it's all right to stop him on the street and ask him about it.
Sean heard this one of Steve Bertrand and Bill Leff.
Ever lick one, Bill?
Yeah, a couple times. Mm.
I don't want to comment on that. Something I've suspected for a long time.
Peter submitted this one of Wendy.
I had fun when I was doing it.
Again, that seems like a very rational, normal comment. I would hope that that's her opinion.
Ken in Milwaukee emailed this one of Bill.
If you enjoy a good cherry, I would head out there right now.
Do you give an award at the end of the year for, like, the most appearances on Straight Out of Context? Is there a plaque?
Wendy would dominate.
Oh, yeah, Wendy. Yeah. Because I think last time I was here, there were 15 of her talking about somebody's sausage.
Mm-hmm.
That seems about right for her.
All right, this next one.
Yeah.
Ken in Milwaukee, Celine, Carol, and Jim. Sent these of Rokan, Ana de Flantes, Judy Pilot, Kevin Powell, and Violetta Podramatic.
Oh, no.
We're down here playing with my bat.
You have not let that out of your hands.
I actually might come down and touch your bat.
I'm never going to let this thing touch anything ever again.
So only you're going to touch it.
Put it to use.
I want it to be completely, you know, clean. Like to get this thing mounted?
Wow. That afternoon crew was feisty.
Oh, a short time later.
Oh, is that right?
Here's Anna, Kevin, and Violetta from Ken in Milwaukee.
When you touch it, it's there. There's a special feel to it because it's dead.
Tell me about it.
Suddenly, somebody's an expert.
And another one of Roe from Ken.
If you got sweaty, it would move around in your hand too much.
Probably true. I'm guessing.
You've heard.
Right. Well, yeah. Other people have sent me emails about it. I've received a lot of correspondence regarding that situation.
The last four are all of Nick DiGilio.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, apparently he gets pretty loose around
vacation. I was going to say, right before he left for vacation, he just went on a tangent?
Yeah, apparently.
And he developed Tourette's? What happened to Nick before he left?
All right, first one, Matthew sent in this one.
Let me know if you've ever floated one.
And then another one from Ryan and Paul.
Fresh from my butt.
Wow. And the phone rings. Is that Nick calling in? Don't play those, click.
Harold sent in this one.
You gave me the hardest part.
Well, that was just nice of him.
And finally, our own Vic Vaughn heard this one and submitted it.
Oh, Vic submitted this one. All right.
That taste will go away.
Eh. Not if you had asparagus. Allegedly, that's what I heard. Wow, is that
that, that concludes our out of context.
No, more. Give me more.
You'll be hearing that, of course, next week.
Oh, yeah, listen. Man, I hope I make the cut next week. Now I'm going to be very paranoid, which I always am. All right, so are we going to take a break?
Let's go ahead and do weather and traffic, and we'll launch Fly Jams Friday.
We've already gotten a couple of suggestions for my Fly Jam nickname. I like one of them. The other one's not bad either, but if you want to weigh in, 312-981-7200. Of course, we'll have Fly Jams Friday, so if you have a Fly Jam suggestion, you call that number two, tell Dan. That's what they do, right? People call, tell you things, you ignore them, and then make me look like the bad
instant
guy.
Instant requests.
Oh, is that right?
It's the request when you call. Text message we play in the coming weeks.
Instant request.
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
Wow, who is that? Who are those dulcet tones?
That would be Duff.
Really?
Yeah.
That's Duffy? He's got way too much soul. I like that. It is Fly Jams Friday. I am not Nick D. Nick D's on vacation, but it's me, Brian Noonan, and I'll be here with you all week. So I'm very excited to be here. All right, it is Fly Jams Friday. You know the drill. You call in. Dan does instant requests. You email them. They come up in the next couple weeks. So we do all of that. And you said you needed to explain something because since last time I was here, some things have changed on Fly Jams
Friday.
Right.
We have all been christened a Fly Jams nickname.
Really? Now, who gave you these nicknames?
Well, so mine started out of a confession I probably should not have made when I was a younger man. But my middle name is Joseph.
Okay.
So I'm Daniel Joseph Shagrew.
Okay.
And I admitted one day that I had always dreamt of being called DJ Shagrew. Because obviously, the thing. So I became.
Well, no, because obviously what?
Yeah, because it's awesome.
Oh,
cool.
All right.
So
awesome
I am,
and cool.
I am DJ Shagrew.
DJ Shagrew. Well, that makes sense.
Right.
That's a fine nickname.
And I think you would be proud, but my outfit, I'm sure you can see it now. I've stepped out of the TARDIS. For some reason, we threw a Doctor Who reference into the Fly Jam world.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
But I am
it's
wearing.
Your world.
Yep. A raspberry beret.
Of course you are.
Hammer pants.
Oh.
A very nice vest that Laura Vaughn got me.
Is that right?
Yes. Susan Berkus gave me the beret.
Nice.
My shirt is open with a tuft of hair popping out.
Of course it is.
And I'm rocking platform shoes with goldfish in the
heels. Yes, those are my favorite.
Right, right. So the shaft is one, Superfly is the other. So,
and, oh, your fish.
Yeah, the fish.
I was gonna say, all
right. Right. So that is my Fly Jams persona.
I like that Fly Jams persona.
Thank you very much. And then to the left, stage left, is Miss Esmeralda Leon, who is
right
now
on.
Esmeralda the Hot Meldum.
Esmeralda the
Heart Melder.
The Heart Melder.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
I spin on my head.
Wow.
I put up cardboard and I spin my way through
you're
the
studio. You're breaking. You're doing the electric boogaloo.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Right.
Esmeralda the Heart Melder.
That is correct.
I like it. Now, does Vic's a serious newsman. Does
he is
ever...
a serious newsman, but when fly jams happen, everything changes. So he is Viggity Vic, Viggity Vic, double vibe, verified V.
Viggity,
wow. Viggity, I don't know why we chose that one.
No. Yeah, let's give Vic a name that none of us can say.
Viggity Vic, double verified V. Right.
That's a moniker.
Yeah.
That's going to be a mouthful when you try to work the ladies at a club.
Right.
What's your name? Viggity Vic, double V verified.
Double verified V. Right.
Double V verified rolled off the tongue easier.
There you go.
It's his nickname.
If you only you had submitted.
I did not submit. That's the problem. Yep. You know, that's the problem of being asleep at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
You know, you miss Fly Jam Friday.
And then Nick's is Wiki Wiki Nicky.
Wiki Wiki Nicky. All right. Wiki, that's Nicky. Easier to say. Yes.
So before he left, he asked the Fly Jams community to start thinking of nicknames for you.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Some are coming in. Let me throw some of these out. No Foolin' Toolin' Groovin' Noonan. That's a lot. That's a mouthful. Boom Boom Noonan. Kind of like that one. Boomin' Noonan. Another one. Stay on the same theme. Croonin' Noonan. And I like this one. Brian Midnight Noonan. But I can't bestow my own nickname. So those are what
good.
We have so far.
We also did get a call from Steve the Gondola Guy.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And
sandwich or the boat?
Maybe both, but probably the sandwich.
Oh, here's what. Big Nuke Noonan. That coming in from Jay from Ohio.
Steve was Big Booty Noonie.
Big Booty Noonie. My booty is much smaller than it used to be.
Right.
So I'd stay away from that. It's not like when you videotaped me sitting on the ball for an entire show.
Right.
Back in the day.
423.
That's when I was all booty.
Yep. If I may suggest one.
Yeah, sure.
I suggest Brian the Time Noonan, because one of the things that impresses me most about you.
I like
you,
to do Jungle Love.
That, and you can tell the time three different ways over the radio.
I can. 424, 24 minutes after the hour, 36 minutes before 5 o'clock. Because I used to be a Screaming Jay back in the day.
So.
Wow, and I
so impressive.
And I'm rhyming all the time.
Hey. So we'll compile all the Fly Jams and then we'll vote next week.
All right, that'll be good. So we'll keep that poll going. And next week during Fly Jam Friday, we'll be rocking the Casbah or wherever we rock. All right, so we should do the first one. The first one coming in, we got time for a couple before we go to the news. Norm from Aurora sent this in. Oh, I love this song by the OJs, Used to Be My Girl. It's such a happy song about such a sad subject, because you hear the groove and you're like, oh, I feel peppy. Then you listen to the words. You're like, oh, now I'm sad. It's like a musical speedball. You don't know which way to go. You're up and down. It's crazy. All right. Explain to me, because I love this next song. But on the surface, I would not have put it in the Fly Jam category. I would have put it in the original rock and roll category. Like a rock, almost rockabilly. So how do you guys define Fly Jam? Is it a loose description? And I'm not putting this song down. Like I said, I love this next song.
Right. In the most technical of terms, it is an R&B or soul or disco song from the 60s, 70s, 80s, or early 90s.
Wow, you're like the mix.
Yes.
Yesterday and today, all the greatest hits.
Right. So if you're thinking record labels, it's Stax, it's Motown. If you're thinking instruments, they tend to be songs that have horns or bass lines as their driving force.
Okay.
But really, in the end, it's a feeling.
Oh, right on. It's almost like you read that from a card, yet I saw it coming.
Or I've had to tell many people that information several times.
Sure, because it was like, I don't understand. Is this just songs about insects? What is this? It's a spider? Is that a fly jam? No, it's not. But you know what is? From the 708, Fats Domino.
Oh, well, goodbye. Although I'll cry in that shame. My tears feel like rain.
How, how? That's got a big saxophone part in it, which horn sections are big in R&B. All right, we'll give it to her. I like the song. All right, we got to do this, and then we'll continue with Fly Jams Friday on the other side of the news. Why not? It's a Friday morning. We're having some fun. It's the Nick D Show on WGN.
Tell me, how you going to do it if you really don't want to dance by standing on the wall? Mm-hmm. Get your back up off the wall. Well, I heard all the people saying, get down on
sing
it.
Along.
Come on in.
Cool in the Gang, that's my Fly Jam pick. Get down on it.
So did you hear they're telling you to get off the wall?
Who?
They were.
Cool in the Gang in the cool. lyrics.
Oh, how am I going to do it if I really don't want to dance? By standing on the wall. Get my back up off the wall. I can get my back up off the wall if I really want to do it. But I still keep my back facing the wall. I'm not leaning on the wall. Because when I was bouncing, we would stand with our backs to the wall, but we would dance, especially when Billy Idol Dancing With Myself came on. All the bouncers would kind of do a little dance.
That was going to be my follow-up question. What type of bar did you bounce at?
It was a big dance club called Jubilation in Chicago Heights. And it was a giant place. It was everything you would imagine from a late 80s dance bar. And that's what it was, a club. It was a club. But it was a club in Chicago Heights. So, you know, take that for what it was, but it had the light up dance floor, you know, there was a big DJ booth and there was a huge security staff because the place was gigantic and it was crazy.
Now, are we talking 21 and over, zero gravity, 18 and over?
No, this was grown, well, 21 and over, drinking a lot. They had regular drinks and they had these big fishbowl drinks and they had all, you know, all kind of craziness. And there was the dance club part. And then there was just a bar part, and then there was a pool room, and then there was an upstairs. So there was stuff everywhere. The potential for things to jump off, Esmeralda, exponentially higher than just a one-room club. It was that's where I learned the head on the, that's where I had a gun pointed right in my face.
What?
Yes.
You're in a regular roadhouse.
Listen, I was nice, you know, until it was time to not be nice. And then I unleashed the fury. I hated it. It was fun, though, but, the gun thing, it happened right in front of my brother because it happened in the parking lot. It was a horrible thing, but, and it's not, I'm not like Mr. Tough Guy. This just happened to me. I wasn't like, but this was a quote from my brother after I got in the car, after I cleaned up my pants and stuff, after this was over. He goes, man, you looked so cool. I was like, shut up, because I guess I didn't flinch. I remember the kid pointing it right at my face and me just going, hey, man, I wasn't the guy who did that.
Wow.
And then he backed up, and later that night he shot somebody because the police were at the bar the next night questioning me about all kind of stuff that happened. Yeah, this was, I don't know. I've led a weird life. I have, very much so.
As people who listen the first 10 minutes of the show know.
Right. I've had a gun pointed at me. I've been in a meth cooker out in the high desert. I've all sorts of things. I wasn't a meth cooker. I stumbled upon them. Anyway, let's get back to Fly Jams Friday, shall we? Enough of my crazy life, because right now people are like, oh, my God, is this guy a felon? No, but I'm gelling. And I ain't smelling. Let's 773 requested this one by Donny Hathaway called The Ghetto. I don't know what he's singing about. Now I get it.
Okay.
Donnie, you got to write some more lyrics. I like the groove, but... All right, we get the picture. Somebody wanted to know if I ripped out the guy's throat and pushed him in a small creek. I did not. But I did have a razor in the toe, in my boot toe when I did the high roundhouse kicks. That is untrue. You know what we need to do on Fly Jam Friday? We must say hello to Fly Jam Bob. Hi, Fly Jam Bob.
Hey, Brian. Hey, I think I'd go with Mr. Slim or Slim Jim Noonan or something like that.
Mr. Slim. We have been getting a lot of very good suggestions. We'll put that one on the list, Bob.
Well, anyway, I have to welcome you back to Fly Jams Friday for your third go-round here.
It's my pleasure to be back.
The first time I called you, you chastised me for not having a song especially for you.
I did?
Yes, you did.
That doesn't sound like me at all, Bob.
And the second time I learned from my mistake, and I actually did have a song which I had picked for you, I played Ico Ico by the Dixie Cups because you had a brass band in a few days before.
I do remember that.
This morning I have another song just for you. I'm going to take you back to 1979 to Old Comiskey Park.
All right.
Where you and Nick and my friend Gary and I are the only remaining cruise heads I know.
All right.
In your honor, here is a song you heard back then. Here's Love Will Find a Way.
Stellar pick, Bob.
Once you get past the pain, you'll find the kind of love again. Love, so keep your heart up, because love will find a way.
It will indeed. Thank you, Bob. That's an excellent pick.
Oh, I appreciate that, but now I have a dilemma I need for next week. I need you to tell me more about your personal favorite Fly Jam so I can pick something else for you next week.
I will drop hints throughout the week. It'll be like an Easter egg in a movie.
Okay, I'll be listening.
All right, thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
Esmeralda, your face went a little blank during that Pablo Cruz. You're not a big fan of Pablo Cruz?
You know, Yacht Rock is really not my...
Well, back in 79, when they were opening for Steve Miller Band and the Eagles at Comiskey Park, that was the jam right there. That was their hit. That's where you go. Well, that's why they're opening on a three-act bill, because they're a one-hit wonder. They may have more than one hit, but that's the big one. That's the big hit right there, Pablo Cruz. All right, let's get to a couple more. We got time for a few more, Dan?
Yes, we do.
All right, good. Listen, I don't know what time it is. I can't look at the clock. I'm busy, you know. Watching my back. The 773 wrote in honor of the passing of Kashif, I would like to request the number one hit he produced for Evelyn King, I'm in Love. And for those of you who don't know Kashif, he was a producer, innovative songwriter, producer behind hits by Whitney Houston and Evelyn Champagne King. Also a popular solo artist in his own right. He was 59 years old when he died. Passed away in Playa del Rey, California on September 25th of undetermined causes. He signed with Arista Records as a solo artist in 83. Kashif charted 8 top 20 R&B hits, but it was his pioneering talent as a producer, minimalist soundscapes, skillfully integrating synthesizers and drum machine patterns, and songwriter that put Kashif in demand. So this was one of the songs he produced for Evelyn Champagne King, I'm in Love. That. That had a nice groove to it. Evelyn Champagne King. So Kashif, pour one out for Kashif, who cannot be with us. Esmeralda already poured one out in the traffic center earlier. Not
preemptive.
Kashif. Yeah, she knew something was going to happen. I'm just pouring something out now just to be safe. Mark's been hanging on. He wants to jump in on Fly Jams Friday. Hi, Mark.
Hey there. I think maybe How Can You Mend a Broken Heart could apply, could work as a fly jam, but most of the early Bee Gees wouldn't. But in 75 summer, they decided to adapt to the music industry, and they came out with Jive Talkin'.
Everybody's dancing to that one. Good one, Mark. Thank you. That was a good one. Jived. That was from. Was that from Saturday Night Fever? The soundtrack. Is that from Saturday Night? I think it is.
That's a good question.
I believe it is. I think everything the Bee Gees did that most people know is from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. Did you ever see that movie, Esmeralda?
Not in its entirety.
Tony Manero. Strutting down the street, the big hair, the whole deal. Look at Dan doing research now, checking it out.
Trying to find out.
Yes, no? Doesn't matter.
The album Main Course.
Oh, I guess I'm wrong.
And hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100.
Thank you, Casey Dan.
No problem.
Dan Kasem. Whatever. Look at this. From the 815, they want to hear some Staples singers. And what I say to everybody I know, respect yourself.
Respect yourself.
Respect yourself, DJ Dan, the Fly Jam Man.
I try to.
Do they ever expand on it, or is it always DJ Shagru?
Well, it was funny.
Like DJ Dan.
We had a listener.
Because then you can rhyme all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. We had a listener who thought mine was the weakest of the bunch, that I should be like DJ Shagruvy.
Oh. Wow. So, yeah. DJ Shagruvy, so I like.
I believe listener Chip suggested that. So
Chip, off the old block. I like that.
That's his fly jam nickname.
Chunky Chocolate Chip. Bringing it to DJ Shagruvy. Now we're getting, man, I like that. I like it. And more the listeners are really suggesting some good ones for me. And again, I will have nothing to do with picking it, and I will live with the yoke of DJ fly jam nickname that Esmeralda and Dan pick for me for next week. So we'll see. Bri on the Fly, I like that. Slim Boom and Noonan. Lot coming in. All right, you said you had one, Dan, that you had to get in?
Yes.
That we had to jump in for?
Fellow producer Bennett Wakenight.
Oh, yeah.
A contributor to the Fly. He's doing well. He's getting ready for the opening bell coming up at 5.
Look
with Steve Brzanich.
Oh, that's very early.
Paul Nolte coming up after 5:10.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
Kingsview Asset Management.
I have no idea what you just said. I heard sound, and I heard something that sounded like management. As if they're listening now. You know management is sound asleep.
They check out the podcast, though.
Of course they
Todd
do.
Todd Manley, big Fly Jam fan.
Sure.
Yes.
Let them listen to the first 10 minutes of the show. See what happens when you let a mental patient fill in.
Bennett Wakenight is going old school here. He's requested the Sugar Hill Gang Rapper's Delight.
Wow.
To the boogity bang bang, the boogie to the boogity beat. I say I can't wait to the end of the week when I rap it to the rhythm of a groovy beat and attempt to raise your body heat. I just blow your mind so that you can't speak and do a thing but a rock and shuffle your feet and later change up to a dance called the freak. And when you finally do come into your rhythm,
I always think this should be sung by an old granny. That's, you know, the old lady from the Adam Sandler movies. All right, DJ Shigroovy. Oh, somebody. Cookie wants you to jump in. All right. Nick D Show. Brian Noonan in for Nick D this week. Nick is on vacation. We will be holding down the fort and having all sorts of fun as the day goes on. When you go, I know you don't go out very often, Dan, because you're a responsible homebody. When you go out, do you enjoy a dive bar? Do you enjoy a club? Do you enjoy like a restaurant-y kind of place for a drink?
A younger man would enjoy the dive bar, but most of the times it's just a nice beer and a shot place, a little nicer than a dive bar, but not too fancy.
All right, so more of a tavern. See, I like a good dive bar. I'm not highfalutin. I don't put on airs. And you know I like a sense of danger with my drinking. I always like that there's something could happen.
Obviously, as we learned today.
Sure. Well, and I told that story not to brag. It all came together. But that was, you know, I bounced for 2 summers in college between my junior and senior year. And then after I graduated, I bounced for a couple months. Yeah, it was, you know, way to make some cash. You got to get paid.
Have to.
You know? Yeah, and I, you know, I'm glad I'm out. Glad I'm out of it, quite frankly. But... So I don't like a lot of gimmicky stuff at the bars. I don't want all you know. I'm not all for that. I did used to like, and I don't know if it's still there. A bar called the Big Nasty. Ever go to that one?
No.
I think it was on Halsted. It was just a big cinder block room. That was it. Nothing fancy. I like that. But I may be persuaded to go to Japan just so I can drink here. A bar in Japan is now allowing you to sip cocktails in a ball pit, like Chuck E. Cheese with booze. How great does that sound? Ball pits are not just for kids anymore. Kotaku reports, and I don't know if Kotaku is a person or a news agency. I'm going to go with news agency, but I don't know. They report that a new bar recently opened in Osaka, Japan. Why don't we talk to promotions? Send Brian to the pit. And we send me over to Osaka. You are welcome to come.
Thank you.
You and bring everybody. I don't care. So many people, as many people as they'll pay for to go to Osaka. How many do you think that'll be? I'm going to go with 0.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with 0. But in my mind, in my fun mind, I'm thinking we're going to Osaka.
That would make a hell of a remote.
Oh, God, it would be great.
The timing would work out. It'd be afternoon there.
Sure. And why not drink in a ball pit in the afternoon? Anyway, they replaced their chairs, tables, and boring bar stools with a massive wall-to-wall ball pit. This sounds like paradise and hell all at the same time. The Ball Pit Bar Dive serves up airtight cocktails in airtight mason jars so you can't spill.
Brilliant.
Boom.
Brilliant.
It charges customers either 60 or 90 minutes all you can drink. 60 or 90 minutes. I say we go with the 90. We do the 3-hour show. So we start the show with the 90-minute drinky. And then the final 90 minutes of the remote, we're just diving into the ball pit incoherently.
That's just all the sound you hear.
Just, and then balls, and then we pop up. Well, that if that doesn't make it. Then we come up and we make like a porpoise sound, and then we go back in the balls, and then we shoot back up. I think it would be great. Open to customers 20 years and older, which is the legal drinking age in Japan. The Ball Pool Bar Dive is decorated with a handful of art prints, neon light strips, and a few television screens. Who's watching television if you're in a big ball pit? Aren't you just lolling about with your mason jar full of, I don't know what kind of drinks they make in Japan. Probably the same drinks they make here. Probably not kamikazes.
Yeah, probably not.
Go over to ask for that.
Have you ever had Japanese beer?
Sapporo.
Sapporo.
I love Sapporo.
I did have Sapporo as well.
Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. It was actually a field trip for Mike Novak and I.
A field trip?
Yes. We visited
gardening show?
Before, we visited the Chicago Gardener of the Year in his garden.
Is that right?
Yes. And, he gave us dinner and a Sapporo.
Were they cutting bonsai trees while you drank the Sapporo?
No, just we were having a lovely Thursday evening dinner in the middle of a massive garden and drinking Sapporo.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't come in. Would you drink in a ball pit, Esmeralda?
No.
Why not?
Can you imagine just the okay. Oh. It is disgusting in there when little kids.
Yeah, but those are little
are
kids
there.
Who can't
yeah.
control their. Functions.
Yeah, and adults, drunk adults
yeah, drunk
are
adults
worse.
Are different. How?
Oh, gross.
Only for an hour or 90 minutes.
Ugh.
Do they spray them down?
Well, the cleaning would be the interesting thing for me.
Let me see if it says anything about cleaning, freaks. Manager, small bar, ball pit filled with some 20,000 multicolored plastic balls. Customer can sip drinks and play in the ball pit, toss around balloons, and swim up to the bar to refresh their drinks, making it the perfect place to relive a favorite childhood memory and a classic cocktail. So there's a swim up bar, there's pools.
Wait. Swim up bar in the balls?
Swim up through the balls.
Yeah.
Not in a pool.
It does. Well, I don't know if there's a pool or just a big pit of balls.
You do swim through the ball pit, so.
Do you?
That might be what it.
I haven't been in a ball pit in a long time.
I mean, I guess that's the term, right? When you don't walk through the ball pit, you swim through it.
You wade through it.
Right.
Or you just roll around and I can't get up. See, I think this would be great. I wouldn't go into one at McDonald's or Chuck E. Cheese because you know you're going to go down there, you're going to find used diapers, you're going to find pacifiers with Zika on them, you're going to find all sorts of horrendous things down there.
And imagine what's in a bar, especially, I used to work at a bar. We weren't cleaning that place top to bottom, spick and span.
Do you think people would get frisky in the ball pit?
Are you, what? Of course.
Man, well, I don't know.
They would get under the balls. They wouldn't swim down.
So the balls would be on top of them?
Mm-hmm.
Look at Dad, like, you guys are lobbying now. This isn't even fair.
That's what's going to happen.
This isn't even right.
That's what's going to happen. But no, the limes and like the citrus and stuff use for drinks.
No, it's airtight. These mason jars are sealed, so the limes aren't falling out of there.
No, but limes in regular old bars are disgusting.
Okay.
Okay, so they're supposed to be filled with bacteria. I don't care. I'm like, what else? They're going to drink it. But imagine the ball pit. In the bar, if just the limes are very bacteria ridden.
Where did you hear this that limes are bacteria ridden?
There's been stuff floating around that it's not very good because think about it. And again, I was a bartender.
Yeah,
you're touching money, you're touching everything, and then you're cutting limes.
Don't you do your lime cutting? Isn't that sort of your pre-op?
Right,
deal?
you do that, but then how are you getting it out of wherever it is? You're using your hands.
Oh.
That probably just touched some very dirty money.
Wow. Listen. Let's bring in Steve Brzanich. Maybe he knows about dirty limes. He's doing some. Is there anything dirty lime related in business today, Steve? Hi.
I can't speak to dirty limes, but I can speak to dirty balls. And
who can't?
These balls in these places are just filled with bacteria. The CDC did a study a couple of years ago that said, "Do not put your kids in one of these ball pits because they're just cesspits, basically."
Again, these are children.
I do know that, yeah.
I think Japanese adults or tourists may be different.
I don't know.
I hold out hope for humanity, Steve, unlike you and Esmeralda and Dan and everybody else.
Well, if they boiled those balls every night, maybe.
Well, that's always good advice.
Why do I think I just made it on some other program?
I think we'll be playing you next Friday morning. Tune in at about 3:45.
I always walk into that trap every time.
That's all right. Well, we lured you in with a ball pit. You can't throw out ball pit and then just expect everybody to pay it no mind.
Or dirty ball pit.
Dirty ball pit.
That's even worse.
So what's coming up?
Well, we're going to be watching the hurricane, obviously, seeing what impact it will have on people and lives. But soon they'll starting to count the dollars, too. We'll see just how devastating it is. But more importantly, we're going to get you through the weekend, check our portfolios. Big jobs report out later today. Paul Nolte, who's one of our experts, will be with us to sort of guide us through today. And then later in the program, some cheap airfare. We'll get you out of town really cheap.
That sounds excellent. We'll be listening. Thanks,
Steve. Have a great day.
You too. Esmeralda is lovely. We will see you all next week.
Yeah, so, I'll see you next week.
Oh, I'll see you. I'll be watching. Try not to pour things all over the studio. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Don't get any jorts on you. Don't see guys who won't wear.
Don't get jorts on you. Check.
Don't date guys who won't wear buttons. That's all my advice for you on the weekend. Thank you, Dan. Let's do this. Then we'll say goodbye for good. Not for good, hopefully. I don't know.